You're listening to The Fuse Show, where wealth management and tech innovation converge. We break down the keys to success, as well as the technologies, mindsets, and solutions that will propel top advisors into the future. Here are your hosts, George Spagara and Ryan Donovan.
Well, George, today's guest, we're really excited to have Matt Middleton, Chief Executive Officer at Advisor Circle. Advisor Circle, for those of you who don't know, is a product and content studio for the financial service industry. Designs experiential events and other forums for advisors to exchange information and ideas. Matt, thanks for joining the show today.
Great to be here.
So one of the things that fascinated me when I heard about you, you know, creating this organization and kicking off a conference was, you know, we've obviously been in a pandemic last few years, and everybody, all these conference organizations, all these vendors have been, breaking news, guys, click in the show notes to learn a little bit about global pandemic and coronavirus. You know, obviously, like, we had a conference in August of 2021, and there were people there wearing masks, and some people, you know, didn't want to go. We actually had, I think, some speakers pull out because they weren't comfortable because of a resurgence in the summer. I mean, you were, like, laying the groundwork for this during this time. You know, as the fire, you know, is burning, you're like, I'm going to run into that building. Yeah. And if I survive, there's a lot of opportunity. So tell me, like, that's a phenomenal risk. What was it that you knew that other people didn't? Or you're crazy? You know, tell me a little bit about where your head was at when you decided to do this.
Yeah, well, definitely a little crazy. But before that, you know, in 2020, when the pandemic really started and you started to think about, well, the future state of live events, right? It's a huge industry. It's important for our industry, but the trade show industry is massive. And at that time, much of the talk in that industry was centered around, you know, digital, hybrid. Will live events ever come back? And we started just, you know, earlier in this conversation around, like, it takes me a lot more to think about traveling now, right? That's for work. If I'm leaving my family, the office, it's an inconvenience, right? And so how do you make it where it's still value add? And for us, it was, you know, I think a lot of people were looking at the hybrid model and looking at digital. And I think there's a place for that. But really what, let's be honest, really sucked over the last 2 years in terms of these digital and hybrid platforms was the lack of interaction, lack of human connectivity. From a sales perspective, right? Dialing back into our industry, it's difficult because there's huge compliance risk. People aren't as comfortable. This is new to our industry, digital, right? In many ways. And so when you start to think about content distribution, I mean, look at the ability we're here now, right? It's great digitally and you could track things better. And so there's real advantages there. When you think about the human connection, which is what, you know, we're built on, we still need to have events. So the question for us was, what type of events are going to come back? And so we looked at it and said, you know, which we were totally wrong. It's like, how long is this thing going to last? And we built it to be a year, which we were completely wrong, right? And so then after that, it was, well, if we were to have live events again as an industry, what would they look like? What would they feel like? And the big thing for us is, well, we need to move away from just focused on the content, the biggest names in the industry. We need to focus on the experience. Why Ryan would want to travel across country? What would he get out of it? Who would he want to meet? And most of our events in the industry are centered around, you know, this fragmented industry where it's, oh, we have an advisor event. Well, no, we actually have an RAA event. Oh, we have a fintech event or advisor technology event. And we looked at it and said, let's create a new approach to the events industry. Let's modernize that space because that hasn't been updated or innovated in 3 decades. And then in our industry, we're like, well, hold on. There's a whole lot going on inside our industry that would need a different type of format. And that's really where this festival concept came to life. And, you know, the idea of having a truly outdoor experiential event versus, you know, tagging onto, you know, big industry names as like the selling point to come.
I can say this isn't a question, it's just a comment. I understand why firms had to go virtually. Being quote unquote a vendor, Ryan, I don't know if I speak to you, but there is nothing worse than covering a virtual booth.
Oh, it's worse.
A virtual conference.
We have to take that just out back and put a bullet in it because that was the worst, where someone would have a conference And they're like, oh, we're going to have you as a vendor and they're going to see like your logo. And like if they click there, they're in this weird box where they could ask you questions and you type those right back to them. That was awkward. I don't remember where we did that, but those were tough.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like you talked a little bit about, you know, the people like me before this, I was telling Matt, you know, that I don't like traveling from New York to the West Coast or even to New Jersey anymore. People are like, hey, could you meet me for a cup of coffee over the river? Absolutely not.
That's a big inconvenience.
You have no idea what it's like for me to cross over the New York City. So basically, you know, it's kind of one of those things like you had to create this, you know, unforgettable experience for people to want to get there. There were some people who were craving it, like George, you know, was out there looking to get out. I mean, George, you've been traveling like crazy compared to me, you know, so just, you know, in terms of the results, I think they're everywhere. It seems like the conference was a huge success or the festival was a huge success, you know, using your term for it. What were your expectations going into it and how did it live up to those?
I was going to say, Matt, before you jump into that, like for those that didn't attend.
Oh, yeah. Explain what it was, because it wasn't like in the Boston Convention Center. Like,
Like what was the concept? And then what were you trying to accomplish? Like what were the expectations that you were looking for with that concept? I think would be helpful.
Absolutely. So the concept around Future Proof is really building an in-person large scale event platform that really focuses on this intersection that is investing, technology, culture, and impact. And investing technology, that's obvious. There's a lot of events that, you know, focus on that theme. The real kicker, I think, to what made the event that we were creating and the festival rather special was that culture piece. What we wanted to do is focus on the human side of the professionals in our industry. And what that means is we wanted to bring in different flavors to content. And so to give you an example, we had a live cooking demonstration that was brought in by an industry participant. And it was a celebrity chef. And so the activity, the experience to the audience was quite literally a cooking demonstration on a stage. What the meaning of it behind it was education around sustainability, right? And using different ingredients over others. And so that's just like one use case as to how this is different. But overall, the theme from, you know, the four pillars that we called him are unique. And then on top of it, to bring it to an outdoor festival, truly a citywide experience that crossed over four hotels, half mile outdoor space alongside the beach, more relaxed setting in terms of, you know, attire. It just made the entire human interaction that much more favorable. And you think about it from a vendor perspective, meeting advisors there, it's more welcoming. Most people, and we've been to, you know, several different conferences across the country. And when you think about it, it's like, as an organizer, you have to dangle carrots constantly, right? You have a keynote session, you want everything there. So you shut down the exhibit hall. Okay, what does that mean for the vendors? It sucks, right? And then, all right, now it's supposed to be, you know, the traffic's light in the exhibit hall. So what do you do? All right, let's dangle some carrots. We're going to put some coffee there. We're going to put some food there. And let's force feed, you know, like the advisors, let's create this world in which if they want to eat, if they want to drink, they need to go talk to vendors.
They need to get through the gauntlet. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the luxury of it is the last day where it's like, it's usually the best traffic day because all your tchotchkes are there and everyone wants to, you know, all right, what am I bringing home for my kids? Yeah. And that is just bad behavior. And so for us, we brought it all into this one open canvas, which is content stages were more experiential. Exhibit booths were more like, you know, cabana tents outside. And then we had a whole host of different experiences that were taking place within those booths that weren't just traditional like 10 by 10 space. Okay. I mean, I guess it was a lot of it of a complete different format in thinking about how do we usher in this new experience related to our industry events.
Matt, if we were in the same room right now, I would get up and give you a long, awkward hug.
I know, me too. But the dirty little secret is here is Matt is a former sales guy, so he gets it. Yes, so he's organizing a conference as a former sales guy, realizing what vendors need.
He just went down the list of all the things that drive me nuts about conferences.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, you know, how many times have you come back from a conference, George, and you've been like, we can't do this next year. Like, take this money and reallocate it because the conference just didn't understand or didn't appreciate like we're there and as a vendor, you know, it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And yeah. you expect Huge. To be able to get interactions, networking, meeting with your clients or prospective clients or meeting with other vendors. That's like kind yeah. of the last kind of priority, right? It's great we all get the opportunity to have a drink together and, you know, commiserate.
I'd like that interaction to be founded on genuine interest and value in our solution rather than the fact that I had a cute stress ball or a stuffed animal sitting on a
Yes.
On a counter.
Yes.
Honestly.
Can I get a pen? You mind if I borrow a pen?
I was like, I don't want to make eye contact, but I really like your pen.
Yeah. The people who kind of wander over to the booth and you're like, they really don't want to talk. I'm like, just take whatever you need.
Let me take a moment to take a drink out of my industry tchotchke here.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you another example of why I think, and it's obviously, it just happened organically, but we were pleased to see it. Like I was chatting with an asset manager that was there just attending. They didn't even have a booth. And they were wearing at the time, you know, Fighting Irish hat, just dressed casually. And like a billion-dollar RIA, you know, CIO walked up to him and was like, hey man, tough game yesterday and started chatting. And then they very quickly realized that they were both from the same town. Their kids went to the same school. And now they have a meeting after. And like the asset manager salesperson walked up to me and was like, appalled. He was like, hey, I'm just sitting here minding my own business. And I was approached by my ideal client, right? And in the traditional event space, you know, we're buttoned up, we're suited up. I'm standing in front of my booth and I'm trying to lure these people in. And it's already ingrained to us that the behaviors are avoid at all costs because they're always going to try to sell me something versus starting to connect the interaction on the human level because we have shared interests, hobbies. We all work in the same industry. So there's number one, right? We're all connected. Yeah. But what is it about you and I that make us want to know each other? And then we could get business done after.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That's so like, if I have to see another person in like a full expensive suit and Air Jordans, like, honestly, like I love that fact. Like it allows them to show the personality that you connect on a deeper level. Like, you know, we've all been told like sales starts with relationships, right? Like Dr. Daniel Crosby was one of our guests and he was like, you know, what was the stat, Ryan? Like 90% of all sales interactions are because the two people involved, the prospect and the salesperson, like each other. Yeah. They have a relationship. And that right there is such a great example of how you can start that from common interests and show personality. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like, you know, being genuine is certainly, you know, important too, because you, you know, eliminate that facade that people have, you know, like I put on a suit and I become a different person. And then you have genuine conversations that, you know, are productive professionally, personally. But, you know, one of the things as an overweight, middle-aged white guy, I was told that there was few of me at your conference and it didn't look like the typical conference. So, you know, I guess in terms of the diversity objective, was the benchmark, you know, really looking at, you know, the demographic of the American public and, you know, trying to represent that a little more than what you typically would see at a conference?
Yeah. So there's two ways to view that, right? I think everyone has great intentions when they create conferences in our industry to try to make it, you know, more centered or more diverse, more inclusive. And I think where it falls short is, well, there's two reasons. One, it's the pay-to-play model, right? Where most of these events, it's not a hidden secret anymore, but most of these events are funded by sponsored speaking roles, right? It's the...
Oh, sorry. Did I let that out? The cat's out of the bag.
When you're looking at it from, you know, a business standpoint, it's the highest margin opportunity that you could offer a vendor, right? And usually it's the most sought after, again, the behaviors that we created in this industry. And then the problem typically is in our industry, you know, most of the people in our industry look like us. And so how do you change that perception? Because if you want a more diverse audience, it starts with the people that they could see as associated with your brand, which typically before the event is your speaker faculty, right? And so to think about how to create a more diverse, inclusive speaker faculty, you actually have to, you know, take it from the profit center of your business to really change the perspective of what you're trying to do. And so for us, year one was centered around building this platform that is uniquely different, showing the bright side of our industry, right? The evolution of our industry. We've made massive strides in, you know, D&I efforts. We just don't tell the story very well. And our events don't represent that. And so we worked with, you know, Choir to jumpstart our, you know, agenda creation and curation, right? leaning to them and, hey, we have these topics. You know, who are some speakers? I have a great content team here at Advisor Circle that really went like, all right, this is the person you would think is the best at this topic because, you know, they get the most media coverage. They're speaking at every single event. And we're like, all right, cool. They're at NIXT right from the start. Like, we don't want them. Go uncover the person that is the emerging mind in this space. And on top of it, in some cases, let's put them side by side so that we're giving a voice to the person who is just as, you know, important in that particular area, but again, doesn't get the media coverage or doesn't have that platform. Let's give them that platform. And what turned out to be is I think a lot of the industry said, well, this feels different. It looks different, right? From the brand colors and everything. And then they're like, I'm going to go, whether they believed in it or not, said, I'm going to go and experience it to see if it truly is different. And that, I think, led to a much younger audience.
Yeah.
A more diverse audience. There was definitely more women. I've been doing this for, you know, 12 years now. There's definitely more women there. And it just felt very vibrant. And it felt good to be a part of this industry for once. So, yeah, we were super pleased in terms of, you know, success metrics on, you know, where we shook out in terms of the types of speakers we had. We were very pleased with the changing faces of the attendee pool. And then, of course, we were extremely pleased with the natural organic interaction that took place among everyone, not just having an event that focuses on this or a session that focuses on this. Everyone was, you know, mingling. Everyone was learning from each other. And that is how we change an industry.
Well, that's fantastic. So you mentioned that you worked with Choir to go through the agenda. Is that correct? It was on the front end, really, and forming who the speakers are going to be and that type of thing, right?
Yeah. So they do a great job in, they're pretty blunt, I would say. So we curate an agenda. We have suggested speakers and they basically go in before and say like, well, you should really think about this. So there's some high level kind of stats that they go off of or metrics that they go off of. But then they really dig in as a consultant to help you think through like, you might not know people in this area, but here's five suggestions and here's their resume. And then post event, what I think they do a good job of, which we're in this process right now, is actually auditing it, like hold you accountable and then share it to the industry for better or for worse. And so I do think Choir and what they're doing will slowly start to change not only how our industry events are built, but also the perception of our industry from, you know, outsiders, which I think is great.
Well, that's fantastic. So you were able to, you know, get that interactive experience, you know, without sacrificing the content, which I think is really important too, because that's ultimately why people go. They don't go there to, you know, skateboard, work out on the beach. And so the content is important.
Well, that was one thing that fascinated me too, Matt. Like, I think it would have been just as easy for you to call the San Diego Convention Center or Nashville Convention Center and have everything done for you. But you went to the city of Huntington Beach.
I've never been. What kind of city is this, George? Tell me a little bit. Is it like laid back? Is it uptight?
To put it, since we mentioned on the last podcast that I watched JT and Chad go deep on Netflix, it's full of super chill Stoke Lords and it's nothing but Stoke, right? It's your typical SoCal place. It's got a beautiful beach. It's got a great boardwalk. It's got a bunch of like restaurants and bars kind of right off on the other side of the highway.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite places to go because it is still, again, I mean, Matt, you can probably describe it better than I can. It's not like overly expensive and glamorous and they're trying to like, you know, create this persona of it's very, you know, fashionable and all. It's very much like SoCal vibe.
Yeah.
But the amount of like local bureaucracy that I'm guessing you had to go through with permits and scheduling and all of that, like that's commendable.
Well, yeah, to describe it, the way I look at it is like, it's like Jersey Shore meets SoCal, right? Where it's not like LA, as you would imagine SoCal, but the whole vibe is very relaxed. It's a surf vibe. It's a beach town. Most of it is walkable. But yes, when you start to think about the unknowns, right? We've never ran a festival before. We never hired people that ran festivals before. So much of it is, you know, used to the old model. And so the things that we uncovered throughout the process were interesting to say the least. You know, the city of Huntington Beach, the mayor specifically, very welcoming. But yes, I think there was moments throughout the process where they were kind of scratching their head, like, why do you need this permit? Or kind of like, you know, back at it, like compliments and in a sense like, wow, this feels really amazing. But you know, the air show that has, you know, 20,000 people doesn't ask for these permits. And it's like, okay, but yeah, we need them because we have this idea. And then as it started to get, you know, built, I mean, we were there a week before building the outdoor area. And, you know, slowly every single day, you know, a new member of the city department would come by and be like, we're curious, what's going on here? And then like, oh, that's you guys. And then, you know, slowly and steadily as Sunday, right before we kicked off and everything was built, it was like, oh my goodness, no one's ever done something like this before. So they were very excited with what was being built. And obviously, you know, our industry is great. So just to be the host city of something like this, they were very pleased. But it was interesting to say the least in terms of the development of how we had to constantly, you know, hey, can we do this?
What are some examples there of some of the wild things? I mean, I'm intrigued now because I'm an outsider looking 3,500 miles or so away. You know, what were some of the highlights that you had done?
Yeah. So first of all, I think most people, when we call it a boardwalk, right? There's no true Huntington Beach boardwalk like you would think in like, you know, Jersey Shore and like Seaside or say. But what we did is say it's the future-proof boardwalk. And so we effectively took over a half mile long public beach parking lot and we converted it into what we called the boardwalk, which was the entire event. And so right from there, just trying to conceptually get them to think about this as an event, a B2B event versus, you know, things that they're used to doing, like a marathon and other things, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just getting them to understand the concept and the thesis and who it's for took about a month. And then when you start to dive into it, it's like, you know, for us, it was, I never had to, you know, rent bathrooms before. It's like, you know, $100,000 in bathrooms. You're like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Wow.
So things like that. But, you know, as we started to really go through it, you know, we were blocking off streets at some point in terms of think of flow.
It looks like that 4-lane highway was just completely blocked. I mean, that had to be a pretty expensive permit.
Yes. So from a cost standpoint, they were willing to work with us for a long-term partnership. But yes, they were definitely looking at this as, oh, wow, this is a big industry and they have a lot of money. Let's see what we can do here.
Yeah, like right outside the festival where they're like pitches for vacations or hotel advertisements too.
Guys selling glow sticks.
Yeah.
I was really interested in it because the other thing is sometimes you go to a conference and they give you like a little like dessert plate and they're like, oh, go have lunch. And you're like, oh, you know, I'm going to eat like rubber chicken or something. I heard there are food trucks there that were pretty awesome. So that would have done it for me.
Yeah. We had 12 rotating food trucks throughout the days. Again, it created a different vibe, right? I think, you know, the biggest joke for these conferences is, you know, it's beautiful cities. You see the same carpet, you eat the same rubber chicken, and you have the same burnt coffee, yeah. Right? And mm-hmm. I think what we did is like, all right, well, right away, let's end all of that, right? So we had no carpet, completely outdoors. You know, we removed the rubber chicken and had, you know, tacos and everything else.
Did you have birria tacos, like the California, you know, like deep fried tacos?
Yeah. So we had, I mean, there was a constant rotation. And what was good about it is, you know, when you start to think about like the, you know, unbundling the traditional conference, right? The traditional conference is built in like, just kick off the day with a big keynote because you want everyone there up and early. That you have an AM break so the vendors are happy in the morning. Then you do this hour long lunch and hey, maybe we could get a speaking person in there, right? And it's like, you know, awkward sitting down next to strangers, but really I just want to eat and get back at it. And then the same thing happens in the afternoon. And so for what we did is saying, well, if we truly call it a festival, think about a music fest that you would attend. You would bounce around to these stages based on your interests, right? So that's content. You would then, you know, hang out and talk around with people. So you have to put, you know, different bars and foods, but you don't want to make it where you're blocking out time. So what we did was saying from 10 to 4 every day, have at it. If you want to have 10 lunches, go ahead. If you want to have a meeting there and pick up a tapas style taco or a smoothie, you know, you have the ability to do so. So it's really just changing the, I guess, the rigidness of what we're so used to in these B2B conference settings to be, you know, create your own adventure. And here it is.
Sorry to take us down this rabbit hole, but it is 1:35 and I have not had lunch here in New York. So I'm like laser focused. I'm like Googling.
I saw you drooling and I was wondering.
Yeah, I know.
I knew once you said food trucks, I'm like, oh, geez, the rest of this episode is going to be Donnie asking questions about food.
I love food. Yeah. Like I said, I think I added the preface, an overweight middle-aged white guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the things that, like, now that you're on the other side of it, What are some things where you were like, that didn't work out as well as I thought it would? And what are some things where you're like, that worked way better than I thought it would?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So in thinking about it, the things that what didn't work out as well, you know, I understood how risky this was, right? So I understood running a completely outdoor event for an industry that hasn't really, you know, changed the perception of these events in decades was going to be difficult. The things that I looked at in terms of, well, like, let's solve for the person we want to come here in year five. And that's how we built it. Looking back now, I would say, you know, there is a lot of engagement in the session areas. And so how do we make that experience more comfortable, right? So if you do want to sit there for 5 hours straight, you know, I have ADHD, so I can't sit. I can't even go to the beach and sit in a chair for 5 hours, right? I'm constantly doing something.
No, 30 minutes at the beach and then I'm off.
Exactly. So like, how do you make it where for that person who is just there for content and there to learn, how do you make it conducive, that space conducive for them to sit there? And so that is more shading. That's bringing in some of these, you know, like big industrial fans to basically just constantly make the area cooler. The one thing with us is like that you never could prepare for is weather, right? And the reason why we're in Huntington Beach is, you know, 99.8%, it's, you know, 75 and sunny, except for right before we went and launched the event, right? So we had a hurricane watch.
Really?
Yeah, there's a hurricane watch, you know, 4 days before. Obviously, it didn't hit much. But as you're starting to develop things, you know, the things that you can't plan for is just are those things. There's always outside risks. But, you know, to see it and see the team kind of manage through it, I think was remarkable. So that from a content perspective. And then thinking about just how do you introduce more of a citywide experience, right? Our plan is to grow, you know, we had 2,200 this year. Our plan is to double that next year. You know, there's ways in which you could constantly just continue to grow the outdoor footprint, but we're also interested in partnering up with, you know, other events, right? And other, you know, industry associations that want to have a space there. And how do you bring that, you know, their community into this larger festival platform? And so is that, you know, introducing more of the, you know, indoor space of the hotels more to make it true, like South by Southwest style feel? There was a couple of cringeworthy moments related to like, just like AV, you know, they're our friends who a sponsor decided to, you know, have a plane running with an advertisement. And that's great, really creative advertisement. But we had, you know, a keynote presentation on stage and all you hear is like the sound of the, you know, the jet going. And so it's like, or the muffled wind in the speakers. There's things like you can't plan for until you experience it.
Yeah.
And what we realized through this whole process is all of those moments where we're like, ah, we could have done better there. They're easily fixable, which is so great. There was never a moment where like, oh, this concept doesn't work because of that. And then when you look on the positive side, like what really did work, I was fascinated with the openness of people, right? Like we could build this concept, right? We could call it a festival, it's outdoors, you bright colors. But we all know like events is a representation of the people that are there, right? That's the experience that people remember. And for the fact that everyone there, you know, 2,000 plus people came and embraced this concept, dressed down, engaged each other, wanted to learn more about each other, both professionally and personally, like that to me, like I was expecting that to be, you know, a year three, year four. Oh, I experienced it. I'm comfortable in this platform, you know, and now I have it. To see that, you know, culminate in the first year and have people buzzing and excited about what the possibilities are for the following year, that to me was like, all right, the last 2 years were well worth it.
Oh, yeah. Our national sales manager of product, he sent me a note and was like, this will change how conferences are done. He was like, this was so amazing. Like, this is going to change the game. So I think that's a good testament that what you're doing is what people want, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Like I'm more comfortable in that setting. I got rid of all of my suits in 2020, pretty much all of them. And then now we have a conference coming up that's 4 days.
He acts like that was a voluntary choice. I put on so much weight that none of them fit anymore.
As George will contest, I was not overweight before the pandemic.
He was doing the Tommy boy.
It was strategic, I swear.
I was like a Greek god sculpted by Michelangelo prior to March 2020. But yeah, no, it's like now I've got a conference coming up that's like 4 days and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to wear because it's going to be a buttoned up, you know, professional conference in an exhibit hall where I'm going to get pasty white by the time the week is over. And I'm like, I don't know.
But Ryan, I want to stop you there for a sec because this is the problem with the industry. You just said it's going to be a 4-day buttoned up professional conference. I think we proved, you know, earlier last month that it could be a professional conference, but we could actually be people. Like we could talk the way we talk to our friends and family. We could dress this way we dress on weekends. And guess what? We're still smart. Guess what? We can still conduct business. And that is like from an industry perspective, like it's a people's business. We need to get away from this Wall Street moniker and move into really what our industry has become, which is like we service everyday investors. We service creatives. We service, you know, real estate moguls. And so it's not because you're dressed in a 3-piece suit or a $1,000 suit, does it make you smarter? And for me, like I learned that the hard way in my 20s, right? I studied finance and I didn't know anyone in the space. So I didn't get into it. And I, you know, happily found, you know, media and service the industry. But I spent my 20s trying to fit in, trying to conform, right? Saying like okay,
we all did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is the way, if I want to be successful in this industry, this is how I have to look. This is how I have to talk. This is what I have to do. And then, you know, my 30s hit and I'm like, this sucks. Like I'm a shell of who I am. And really, as I started to evolve over the last several years, I started to look at it and say like, actually, like my uniqueness, my difference gives me a different perspective on this industry. And as a whole, for all of us, we need to be more of ourselves. And the differing of opinions, different backgrounds, right? Diverse perspectives, like all of that makes our industry so special. So why do we try to hide it?
Gosh, it's so interesting. Like, Donnie, you can attest to this too. Exactly what you just said, you go to these industries and everyone looks the same, talks the same, exactly what you're saying. But then as you go to enough of them, you find like your tribe, right? You're able to cut through and be like, this guy, I love hanging out with this guy because I got some time to cut through the suit, the talk, the everything and get to know him. And then you're like, at the end of the conference, you're like, I'm going to find these six people and I'm going to go away from the conference and just hang out with them because I like to be with them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And like to take that concept and say, that's what we're going to start with. And then we'll go from there. Like is incredible to me. I love that concept because I mean, that's really where business actually ends up happening. Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You gave me so much to think about. I got to be honest. I just thought we were going to talk about future-proof highlights. I'm like, holy cow. I got to rethink the way I do everything pretty much. I mean, I'm already pretty genuine. Like you could see, you know, behind me, my office, and I'm wearing
Donnie,
a t-shirt.
But here we go. This is what we do. On the last episode, we talked to Daniel Crosby about Ryan wears a full set of pajamas to bed.
Why do we have to talk about this again?
Steven Seagal-like pajamas. And you go to the conference next week in your Steven Seagal pajamas.
Why do you think Steven Seagal wears pajamas, George? It has absolutely nothing to do with it.
You look like him. You look like Steven Seagal in your pajamas.
I don't
know. That's a compliment.
I don't know. It is. I mean, there's been very different phases of Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Did he happen to tell you why he calls me Donnie? It's from The Big Lebowski. Because... he just wanted me to shut the F up during meetings.
Love that.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, I appreciate you, you know, imparting your wisdom on running events and, you know, getting people excited. I hope that I could get a dance ticket to Future Proof next year. And with that, I guess I'd say, you know, you're going to go through all the anxiety of hoping the weather plays out next year, right? You already announced the dates save the date?
Yeah, so we're September 10th through the 13th, 2023, back in Huntington Beach, California. Bigger, better than ever. Kind of evolving the experience a bit more, creating, I guess, a more diverse speaker faculty and really honing in on, you know, how do we make that experience really second to none?
That's fantastic. And is there anything else Advisor Circle is working on? Any other events in the interim over the next, you know, year?
Yeah, so the interesting piece is, you know, most people look at Advisor Circle, and I got asked this several times at the event, like, what is Advisor Circle? Is it an events company? Is it a media company? And I'm like, yeah, I guess all of that. But really, you know, at the core, we're a product studio focused on modernizing financial services. And really what that means is we don't want to be, you know, pigeonholed into one segment of the industry. We want to be able to partner with who we want to partner with. We want to be able to build the products and services that really cater to that mindset of how do we build to help a modern financial professional. And I think modern is the interesting word there, because most people look at modern and say, oh, it's, you know, next gen, which is a whole nother thing. Like next gen is, you know, it's kind of derogatory in most cases, right? What we're saying is modern is a mindset, right? Modern means, you know, a tech-enabled, future-forward person who is looking to grow both professionally and personally. And so when you think about Advisor Circle, we want more people in our circle that have that mindset. The product, the tool, the event, whatever that case may be, that's just the lever we pull to get there. So yes, definitely more to come.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Sorry, my wife, I think, thinks the recording is done because she just opened up the door. I had to step out there.
I thought you were going to put your pajamas on.
Yeah, the lunch is ready. Everyone stop.
Donnie smelled tacos. Yeah. Well, Matt, it was like...
We have to have you on again, like talk about some just other stuff, you know, like
yeah,
random,
for sure.
Random stuff. You want to talk about random stuff with us? Because
yeah, as long as it's not the Knicks or Giants, we're good.
I love what you're doing. Like if we were in the same room, I'd stand up and give you a long, awkward hug because,
appreciate
you know,
that.
What you're doing is kind of what Donnie and I wanted to do with this show is just bring some personality to it. Like just have conversations like this. And
devoid of personality. This industry.
Yeah. And gosh, what you're doing is so awesome. So I can't thank you enough. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and meeting with you. And yeah, we'd love to have you on as many times as you're willing to come back.
I'm always here. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for sharing your platform.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Fuse Show. This podcast is brought to you by Orion and produced by Turncast. You can subscribe to future episodes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about Orion and The Fuse Show, visit us at orion.com.